Well, well, all my suitors were calling. There was a disposable cell phone tucked into the leaves with a text message waiting. Yes or no? The reply number was zeroed out. I could text him back, but I couldn't call him.
Blaine,
came Behrens's voice from behind me. I shook my head, wondering what I prized most was, afraid to contemplate it. I felt the electricity of his body behind me as he reached around me and took the card from my hand. He didn't move away, and I battled the urge to lean back into him, seeking the comfort of his strength. Would he wrap his arms around me? Make me feel safe, if only for a moment, and if only a delusion?
Ah, the old whatcha prize most threat,
he murmured. I turned around slowly and looked up at him. He stiffened and sucked in a shallow breath. After a moment, he touched my cheek.
Such naked pain,
he whispered. I turned my face into his palm and closed my eyes. His fingers threaded into my hair, cupped my head, and brushed the brand. It heated at his touch. His hand tightened at the base of my skull and squeezed, and he raised me slowly to my tiptoes. I opened my eyes, and it was my turn to inhale sharply. Not human. Oh, no, not this man.
Never show it to me again.
His face was cold, hard, his voice colder. Why? What will you do?
What it is my nature to do. Get inside. It's time for your lesson.
After I'd received yet another failing grade, Behrens and I cruised the streets. I'd gotten no tips from Jane since his last call 4 nights ago. I read the paper each morning. If I recognized the She Sedu's calling card, and I was pretty sure I did, it was jumping to a new victim every night. I knew what the good inspector was doing. He was waiting for his tea. I was waiting for divine inspiration to strike at any moment and show me the way, who to trust, what to do. I had no doubt Jane would get what he wanted before I did. I was wrong. We'd been at it for almost 6 hours, driving up and down, muscling through the city in the Viper. After so many nights, I knew every street, every alley, every parking lot. I knew the location of every convenience store and petrol station that was open between dusk and dawn. There weren't many. Crime might not be keeping the partiers at home. The drunk and lonely are hard to corral. I know that from bartending. But it was certainly sending the small business owners and their employees packing well before nightfall. It made me sad to see Dublin battening her hatches. Just last night we'd discovered a 2-block dock zone that wasn't on my map, by driving through it. I mourned each newly darkened block as a personal loss, a few inches off my hair, a drabber outfit. We were both changing, this boisterous, crack-filled city and I. Normally, when we went hunting, Behrens drove in case I lost control of my primary motor functions, but it had been getting more difficult to turn him away from near brushes with the book, so I'd insisted on driving tonight. He made a lousy passenger, barking directions I ignored, but it was better than the alternative. Last night, when we'd had a near brush with the book, I'd pretended to have an abrupt, desperate need to use the bathroom. The only gas station open was one we'd fueled at, in the opposite direction, and he'd given me an unnervingly searching look. I suspected he was getting suspicious. After all, he could read the paper, too. This morning's crime had been less than a mile from where I'd had him turn around last night. Although he didn't know my radar had been getting stronger, I had no doubt he was going to put 2 and 2 together eventually. And so I was driving, my she-seer senses on high alert, waiting for the faintest tingle, so I could subtly turn us away, when something totally unexpected happened. The She Sedu popped up on my radar, and it was moving straight toward us, at an extremely high rate of speed. I whipped the Viper around, tires smoking on the pavement. There was nothing else I could do. Behrens looked at me sharply.
What? Do you sense it?
Oh, how ironic. He thought I'd turned us toward it. No, I lied. I just realized I forgot my spear tonight. I left it back at the bookstore. Can you believe it? I never forget my spear. I can't imagine what I was thinking. I guess I wasn't. I was talking to my dad while I was getting dressed, and I totally spaced it. I worked the pedals, ripping through the gears. He didn't even try to pat me down. He just said,
"Liar."
I sped up, pasting a blushing, uncomfortable look on my face. All right, Barons, you got me. But I do need to go back to the bookstore. It's personal. The bloody stupid Shisa Do was gaining on me. I was being chased by the thing I was supposed to be chasing. There was something very wrong with that. It's a woman thing, you know.
No, I don't know, Miss Lane. Why don't you enlighten me?
A stream of pubs whizzed by. I was grateful it was too cold for much pedestrian traffic. If I had to slow down, the book would gain on me, and I already had a headache the size of Texas that was threatening to absorb New Mexico and Oklahoma. It's that time, you know, of the month. I swallowed a moan of pain.
That time?
He echoed softly.
You mean time to stop at one of the multiple convenience stores we just whizzed past so you can buy tampons? Is that what you're telling me?
I was going to throw up. It was too close. Saliva was pooling in my mouth. How far behind me was it? 2 blocks? Less? Yes, I cried. That's it. But I use a special kind, and they don't carry it.
I can smell you, Miss Lane,
he said, even more softly.
The only blood on you is from your veins, not your womb.
My head whipped to the left, and I stared at him. Okay, that was one of the more disturbing things he'd ever said to me. Ah! I cried, letting go of both the wheel and the gear shift to clutch my head. The Viper ran up on the sidewalk and took out 2 newspaper stands and a street lamp before crashing to a stop against a fire hydrant. And the blasted, idiotic book was still coming. I began foaming at the mouth, wondering what would happen if it passed within a few feet of me. Would I die? Would my head really explode? It stopped. I collapsed against the steering wheel, gasping, grateful for the reprieve. My pain wasn't decreasing, but at least it was no longer increasing. I hoped the book's next victim would hurry along and tote it off in the other direction fast. Hardly Shisa-like, but I had problems. Barons kicked open the door, stalked to my side, and yanked me out.
"Which way?" he snarled.
I would have fallen to my knees, but he held me up. "I can't," I managed to say. "Please."
"Which way?"
he repeated. I pointed.
"Which way?"
He had voiced me. I pointed the other way. Grabbing a fistful of my hair, he took off, dragging me behind him. Closer, closer still. "You're going to kill me," I cried.
"You have no idea,"
he growled. "Please, stop." I was stumbling, blind to everything but the pain. He released me abruptly, and I fell to my knees, gasping, crying. It hurt so bad, shrieking in my head, ice in my veins, fire under my skin. Why? Why did the book hurt me? Surely I was no longer that pure and good. I'd been lying to everyone. I'd killed a Shisa. Granted, it had been by accident, but it was still innocent blood on my hands, along with all of O'Banion's men. I'd been thinking lustful thoughts about men no sane woman would think lustful thoughts about. I'd been carving up other living creatures to eat, to steal their strength. That was what I needed. Unseelie's strength and power. The darkness that was kith and kin to the book, living inside me. Where was my purse? I fumbled for it through the pain. It was in the car. I'd never make it there. I couldn't even stand up. I whimpered with the agony of simply trying to raise my head. Where was Barons? What was he doing? The air was ice. The pavement beneath me frosted, and I felt it move up my knees and creep over my thighs. An arctic wind whipped at my hair, tore at my clothes. Debris battered me. What was Barons doing? I had to see. I sought the Shisa place in my head. The mere existence of the book inflamed it. It was everything we feared in the Fae, everything we existed to defend against. I inhaled fast and deep, sucking down breaths so icy they burned my lungs. I tried to embrace the pain and convince myself I was one with it. What had Baron said? I over-muscled things. I had to relax, quit fighting it, let it crash over me and ride it like a wave. It was easier said than done, but I managed to push back on my knees and raise my head. In the middle of the cobbled street, 35 feet away, was the beast. It looked at me. "Hello, Mac," it said. It knew my name. How did it know my name? Fuck, fuck, fuck! The shrieking in my head stopped. The pain vanished. The night stilled. I was in the eye of its storm. Barron's was 5 feet from it. I wish I could describe it to you. I'm glad I can't. Because if I could find the words for it, they would be stuck in my head forever, and I don't want anything about it stuck in my head. Its visage is terrible enough, but once it's no longer in front of you, your brain can't quite hold on to it. The way it moves, the way it looks at you, the way it mocks, the way it knows. We see ourselves in other people's eyes. It's the nature of the human race. We are a species of reflection, hungry for it in every facet of our existence. Maybe that's why vampires seem so monstrous to us. They cast no reflection. Parents, if they're good ones, reflect the wonder of our existence and the success we can become. Friends, well chosen, show us pretty pictures of ourselves and encourage us to grow into them. The beast shows us the very worst in ourselves and makes us know it's true. Barron's was leaning. The beast became the innocent hardcover. Barron's bent to one knee. The hardcover became the Shisa Do, with bands and padlocks. It waited. I could feel it waiting. Barron's reached. For the first time in my life, I prayed. God, no, please, God, no. Don't let Barron's pick it up and turn evil, because if he does, we're all lost. I'm dead, the walls are down, and the world is a bust. I realized then that the reason I'd been so conflicted since the night I'd watched Baron step out of the Unseelie mirror was because, in my heart, I didn't really believe he was evil. Don't get me wrong. I didn't think he was good, either, but bad is potential evil. Evil is a lost cause. I hadn't been willing to trust my heart because I'd been afraid I'd make Alina's mistakes, and as I was dying, the bodiless narrator of my life would remark, "Gee, there goes the second Lane girl, dumber than the first." The most confused we ever get is when we're trying to convince our heads of something our heart knows is a lie. His fingers were inches from the Shisa Do. "Barron's!" I shouted. He flinched and looked back at me. His eyes were black on black. "Jericho!" I cried. Barron shook his head once, a violent jerk from side to side. Moving like a man with bones fractured in every limb, he pushed himself slowly to his feet and began backing away. Suddenly the book morphed into the beast and rose and rose and rose until it towered over us, eclipsing the sky. Barron's turned then and ran. The pain was back, crushing, crucifying. The night turned cold and life-sucking, and the wind returned, screaming with the voices of the unavenged dead. I felt myself scooped up. I flung my arms around Baron's neck and held on as he ran. At 4 o'clock in the morning, we were sitting in front of a fire in the bookstore, in the rear conversation area, behind bookcases where no passers-by might see us, not that any were expected at 4 o'clock in the morning on the edge of a dark zone. I was snuggled in a nest of blankets, staring into the flames. Barron's brought me a cup of hot cocoa he'd microwaved, using 2 packets of instant from Fiona's old stash behind the cash register. I accepted it gratefully. Every few minutes, I jerked with a convulsive chill. I doubted I would ever get warm again. "She's with O'Banion, you know," I told him through lips that burned with cold. Even Barron's looked chilled, pale.
"I know," he said.
She's eating on Seely.
Yes.
Do you care?
Theo is our own woman, Miss Lane.
What if I have to kill her? If she came after me now, I'd have no choice but to stab her.
She tried to kill you. If her plan had worked, you would have been dead. I underestimated her. I didn't think her capable of murder. I was wrong. She wanted you out of the way and was willing to sacrifice anything I might want or need to accomplish it.
Were you her lover?
He looked at me. Yes.
Oh. I swirled the cocoa with my spoon. She was a little old, don't you think?
I rolled my eyes at myself as soon as I said it. I was going by appearances, not reality. Reality was Barron's was at least twice her age. Who knew how much more? His lips curved faintly. I began to cry. Barron's looked horrified. Stop that immediately, Miss Lane.
I can't. I sniffled into my cup of cocoa so he couldn't see my face.
Try harder.
I gave a great sniff and shudder and turned it off.
I have not been her lover for some time,
he offered, watching me carefully. Oh, get over yourself. That's not why I cried.
Why, then?
I can't do it, Barron's, I said hollowly. You saw it? I can't get that thing. Who are we kidding?
We stared into the flames for a time, until long after my cocoa was gone.
What did it feel like to you?
I said, finally.
His mouth shaped a bitter smile.
All this time I've been hunting it. I've been telling myself I would be the exception. I would be the one who could touch it, use it. I would be unaffected. I was so certain of myself. Just get me within sight distance of it, Miss Lane, I said, convinced I'd all but have it in the bag then. Well, I was wrong.
He laughed, a sharp bark of a sound.
I can't touch it either.
Can't? Or won't?
A fine distinction. Irony, perfect definition. That for which I want to possess it, I would no longer want once I possessed it. I would lose everything to gain nothing. I am not one for exercises in futility.
Well, at least I no longer had to worry about Barron's or Blaine getting the book before I did. Blaine couldn't touch it because he was Seely, and Barron's wouldn't touch it because he was smart enough to realize that whatever purpose he wanted it for would be instantly forfeit to the beast's all-consuming nature.
Was it coming after us? I asked. I don't know,
he said.
It certainly looked like it, though, didn't it?
I nestled deeper into my blankets. What are we going to do, Barron's?
He gave me a dark look. The only thing we can do, Miss Lane. We're going to keep those fucking walls up.
Chapter 14. When I unlocked the front door Thursday morning to open for business, a measure of how desperately I wanted to be a normal girl in a normal world, Inspector Jane was waiting for me. I stepped back to let him in, closed the door, then, with a gusty sigh, ceded the absurdity of my actions and flipped the sign back to closed. I wasn't normal, and it wasn't a normal world, and pretending wasn't going to accomplish a thing. It was time to call yet another of my own bluffs. The bookstore lulled me with temporary comfort that I had no right to. I should be anxious. I should be afraid. Fear is a powerful motivator. I took the inspector's damp coat and motioned him to a seat near the fire. Normal tea? He nodded and sat. I brought him a cup of Earl Grey, took a seat across from him, and sipped at my own.
Aren't we the pair?
He said, blowing his cup to cool. I smiled. We certainly were. It seemed a year ago that he dragged me down to the station. Months since he'd accosted me in the alcove with his maps. It has downsides, I told him, meaning eating unseely. He knew what I meant. It was what he'd come here for.
Doesn't everything?
It makes you super strong, but the Fae can't be killed, Jane. You can't engage them. You must be satisfied merely seeing them. If you start trying to kill them, they'll know you know, and they'll kill you.
How strong does eating it make you? As strong as one of them?
I considered it. I didn't know and told him that.
So it might.
I shrugged. Regardless, you still can't kill them. They don't die. They're immortal.
Why do you think we have prisons, Miss Lane? We're not allowed to kill the serial murderers either.
Oh. I blinked. I never thought of imprisoning them. I'm not certain anything would hold them.
Except an unseely prison woven from the fabric of the Song of Making.
They sift, remember?
All of them?
He'd made another good point. I'd never seen a rhino boy sift.
I supposed it was possible, only the more powerful Fae could do it, the princes and the one-of-a-kinds like the Grey Man. Isn't it worth a try? Maybe we lowly humans can come up with a few surprises. While you do your thing, others can be doing theirs. The word in the street is that something bad is coming soon. What's going on?
I told him about Halloween and the walls and what would happen if they came down. He placed his cup and saucer on the table.
And you would have me go out there defenseless?
It has other downsides, too. I'm not sure what they all are, but one of them is that if you get wounded by one of the immortal weapons, you'll...
I described Belusha's death for him. The decomposing flesh, the dying body parts. How many of these immortal weapons are out there, Miss Lane?
Two.
How far he'd come from denying missing parts of the maps to so casually speaking of dining on monsters and immortal weapons. Who has them?
Me and someone else. He smiled faintly.
I'll take my chances.
It's addictive.
I used to smoke. If I can quit that, I can quit anything.
I think it changes you somehow. I was pretty sure eating Unseelie was why I'd been able to get closer to the Shisadu. There was a lot about eating Dark Fae I wasn't clear on, but something had made the book perceive me as tarnished, deluded.
Lady, you've changed me more than an early heart attack. Quit stalling. No more tips, remember?
For the time being, I didn't want tips. I had no desire to know where the book was, other than as a means of avoiding it.
You didn't give me a choice when you opened my eyes,
the inspector said roughly.
You owe me for that.
I studied his face, the set of his shoulders, his hands. How far I'd come, too. Far from seeing an enemy, an impediment to my progress, I saw a good man sitting in my store, having tea with me. I'm sorry I made you eat it, I said.
I'm not,
he said flatly.
I'd rather die seeing the face of my enemy than die blind.
I sighed. You'll have to come back every few days. I don't know how long it lasts. I went to the counter, rummaged in my purse. He accepted the jars a bit eagerly for my taste, revulsion married to anticipation on his face. I felt like a supplier to a junkie. I felt like a mom sending her child off to face the perils of first grade. I had to do more than pack his lunch and put him on the bus. I had to give him advice. The ones that look like rhinos are watchdogs for the Fae. They spy, and lately, for some bizarre reason, they've been doing utility work. I think the ones that fly prey on children, but I'm not sure. They follow them behind their shoulders. There are dainty, pretty ones that can get inside you. I call them grippers. If you see one coming toward you, run like hell. The shadowy dark ones will devour you in an instant if you stumble into a dark zone. At night, you've got to stay to the lights. I was half hanging out the door, calling after him. Start carrying flashlights at all times. If they catch you in the dark, you're dead.
I'll figure it out, Miss Lane.
He got in his car and drove away. At 11 o'clock, I was in Punta Cana, walking on the beach with Blaine, wearing a gold lamé bikini. Me, not Blaine. Tacky, I know. He chose it. With a hot pink sarong. I'd released his name to the wind and summoned him shortly after Jane had left, desperate for answers, and not at all averse to a little sunshine. I'd been thinking about the walls all night and most of the morning. The more we knew about them, the better our odds were of fortifying them. The surest bet for information was a Fey prince, one of the queen's most trusted, and one who'd not drunk from the cauldron for a long, long time. First he demanded to know the latest about the Shisa Du, and I told him, withholding the fact that Barons had been with me to avoid a potential pissing contest. I told him there was no point in my continuing to pursue it right now, because I had no clue how to get close to it, and since he couldn't either, there was no way to get it to the queen. As I said that, a question occurred to me that was so obvious I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of it before. You said the queen can touch it, so why doesn't she come after it herself?
She dares not leave Faerie. She was attacked recently, and it left her severely weakened. Her enemies in the mortal world are too numerous. She has fled court and sought an ancient place of refuge and protection within our realm. It is also a place of high magic. There she believes she can recreate the song. None but those few she trusts can enter. She must be kept safe, Michaela. There is no other to lead in her place. All the princesses are gone.
What happened to them? In a matriarchal line, that was a disaster.
She sent them searching for the book, along with others. They have not been seen or heard from since.
And they thought I could do this? If Fey princesses couldn't hold their own against the many dangers out there, what chance did I have?
There's something I don't understand, Vlaine. The walls of the Unseelie prison were put up hundreds of thousands of years ago, weren't they?
Yes.
Wasn't that a long time before Queen Avil erected the ones between our realms?
He nodded.
Well, if they existed independently once before, why can't they now? Why will the prison walls go down, too, if the LM succeeds in bringing those between our worlds down? Why will all the walls fall?
The walls have never existed independently. The walls between our worlds are an extension of those prison walls. Without the song, the queen was unable to fabricate barriers on her own. Separating worlds requires immense power. She had to tap into the magic of the prison walls and entrust a portion of the new wall's fortification to humans. A pact of magic inevitably yields stronger results than a solo undertaking. It was risky, but over the protests of her council, she deemed it necessary.
Why did the council protest?
When first we came here, you were like the rest of life on this world. Savages. Animals. But one day you developed language. One day the dog did not wag its tail and bark. It spoke. She felt that made you higher beings. She granted you rights and ordered us to coexist. It did not work out. But, rather than exterminating you, which two-thirds of her council was in favor of, she separated us, as part of your new rights.
It was obvious Blaine didn't think we deserved any rights at all. Sorry we wrecked your racial supremacy, I said coolly. It was our world first, remember?
Snow dusted my shoulders. You say that often. Tell me, human, precisely what do you think that establishes? That by dint of fate you happen to begin life on this planet entitles you to it? Under our care, your world flourished. We made it verdant. For us, Gia bloomed. Your race has smogged it up, carved it up, concreted it up, and now you overpopulate it. The planet weeps. Your kind knows no restraint. We do. Your kind knows no patience. We are the most patient race you will ever encounter.
His words chilled me. The Fey could take thousands of years getting around to re-imprisoning their dark brethren, but the human race would never survive that long. More reason why we had to keep the prison break from occurring. What's the LM doing that's weakening the walls?
I do not know.
What can we do to fortify them?
I do not know. There were agreements reached between the queen and the human she hid and protected. They must honor those agreements.
They have been, and it's not working.
He shrugged a golden shoulder.
Why do you fear? If the walls come down, I will keep you safe.
I'm not the only one I'm worried about.
I will protect those you care for in Ashford, is it not? Your mother and father. Who else matters to you?
I felt the tip of a blade caress my spine at his words. He knew of my parents. He knew where I was from. I despised any fae, good or bad, knowing anything about the people I love. I understood how Alina must have felt, trying so hard to keep us hidden from the dark new world she'd stumbled into in Dublin, including the boyfriend she had trusted. Had her heart battled her head over him? Had she sensed somewhere deep down that he was evil, but been seduced by his words and charmed by his actions? Nah, he'd duped her. Despite his assertions otherwise, he'd certainly used voice on her. There was no other explanation for the way things had turned out. "I want more than that, Blaine," I said. "I want the whole human race to be safe."
"Do you not believe your people would benefit from a reduction in numbers? Do you not read your own newspapers? You accuse the Fae of barbarism, yet humans are unparalleled in their viciousness."
"I'm not here to argue for the world. That's not in my job description. I'm just trying to save it." He was angry. So was I. We didn't understand each other at all. His touch was gentle, but his eyes were not when he pulled me into his embrace. He took his time with my tongue. I'm ashamed to say I leaned into it, lost myself in a fae prince's kiss, and came 4 times when he gave me back his name.
"One for each of the princely houses."
With a mocking smile, he vanished. The aftershocks were so intense it took me several moments to realize something was wrong. Blaine? I called to the air. "I think you forgot something."
"Me?"
"Hello? I'm still in Punta Cana." I wondered if this was his way of forcing me to use his name again so he could replace it again. "My apologies, Shizia," he'd say. "I have many other concerns on my mind." My ass. If his mind was as vast as he constantly claimed it was, he wasn't entitled to memory lapses. My spear was back. People were staring at me. I guess it wasn't every day they got to watch a bikini-clad, spear-toting woman talking to the sky. I took a good look around and stared myself, realizing it was probably my suit, not my spear, that was most out of place. I'd been so engrossed in my conversation with Blaine that I hadn't noticed we were on a nude beach. 2 men walked by, and I blushed. I couldn't help it. They were my father's age. They had penises. "Come on, Blaine," I hissed. "Get me out of here." He let me stew for a few more minutes before returning me to the bookstore. In a gold lamé bikini, of course. My life changed then. Took on yet another routine. I no longer had any desire to run the bookstore, or sit in front of a computer, or bury myself in stacks of research books. I felt like a terminal patient. My bid to gain the Shizadu had not only failed, it had forced me to admit that it was hopelessly beyond my reach at the present time. There was nothing I could do but wait, and hope that others could do their part, and buy me more time to figure out how to do mine. If it was even possible. What had Alina known that I didn't know? Where was her journal? How had she planned to get her hands on the dark book? 7 days left. 6, 5, 4. I couldn't shake the feeling that there was something going on out there, staring me straight in the face that I was missing. I might have gotten pretty good at thinking outside my tiny little provincial box, but I suspected there was a much larger box that I needed to think outside of now, and to do that, I had to see the box. Toward that end, I spent my days, arm to the hilt, collar turned up against the cold, walking the streets of Dublin, elbowing my way past tourists who continued to visit the city despite the gloom and the cold and the high crime rate. Slipping between unseelie horrors, I popped into a pub for a hot toddy, where I eavesdropped shamelessly on conversations, human and fae alike. I stopped in a corner dive for fish and chips and chatted up the grill cook.
I stood on the sidewalk and made small talk with one of the few remaining human newsstand vendors, coincidentally the same elderly gentleman who had given me directions to the Garda when I'd first arrived here, and who now confided in his lovely lilt that the headlines of the scandal rags were right. The old ones were returning. I toured the museums. I visited Trinity's astounding library. I sampled beers at the Guinness Brewery and stood up on the platform, staring out at the sea of roofs. And I had a startling realization. I loved this city. Even swimming as she was with monsters, deluged by crime, tainted by the violence of the Shi Sidhu, I loved Dublin. Had Alina felt this way? Terrified of what might come, but more alive than she'd ever been? And more alone. The She-Seers weren't returning my calls, not even Danny. They'd chosen. Rowena had won. I knew they were afraid. I knew she and the Abbey were all most of them had ever known, and that she would skillfully manipulate their fears. I wanted to storm over to PHI and fight. Call the old woman out, argue my case with the She-Seers. But I didn't. There are some things you shouldn't have to ask for. I'd given them their show of faith. I expected some in return. I walked the streets. I watched. I made notes in my journal about the various things I saw. Even Barons had abandoned me, off looking into some ancient ritual he believed might help on Soin. Christian called and invited me out to McKeltaland, somewhere in the hills of Scotland, but I couldn't bring myself to leave the city. I felt like a vanguard, or maybe just the captain going down with a ship. His uncles, Christian told me grimly, were tolerating Barons, but barely. Nonetheless, they'd agreed to work together for the duration. His tone made it clear that once the ritual was over, there might be an all-out druid war. I didn't care. They could fight all they wanted once the walls were fortified. 3 days before Halloween, I found a plane ticket to Ashford outside my bedroom door. It was one way. The flight was that afternoon. I stood holding it for a long time, eyes closed, leaning back against the wall, picturing my mom and dad and my room at home. October in South Georgia is fall at its finest, trees dressed in ruby, amber, and pumpkin, the air redolent with the scent of leaves and earth, and down-home southern cooking. The nights as clear as you can find only in rural America, far from the sky-dimming lights of city life. Halloween night, the Brooks would host their annual Ghosts and Ghouls treasure hunt. The Brickyard would hold a costume contest, inviting the town to come as they wished they were. It was always a blast. People chose the strangest things. If I wasn't working, and it was warm enough, Alina and I would throw a pool party. Mom and Dad were always cool about it, checking into a local bed and breakfast for the night. They'd made no secret of the fact that they rather looked forward to getting away from us all for a romantic night alone. I lived my trip home while holding that ticket. Then I called and tried to get Barron's money refunded. The best they could do was reassign the funds, for a fee, to a future fare in my name. "Did you think I'd run?" I asked later that night. Barron's was still wherever he was. I'd rung him up on my cell phone.
"I wouldn't blame you if you did. Would you have gone if I'd made it round trip?"
"No. I'm afraid something might follow me. I gave up the idea of going home a long time ago, Barron's. One day I will, when it's safe."
"What if it never is again?"
"I have to believe it will be." There was a long silence. The bookstore was so quiet you could hear a pin drop. I was lonely. "When are you coming home?" I asked.
"Home, Miss Lane."
"I have to call it something." We'd had this exchange once before, standing in a cemetery. I'd told him if home was where the heart is, mine was 6 feet under. That was no longer true. My heart was inside me now, with all its hopes and fears and pains.
"I'm nearly done. I'll be there tomorrow."
The line went dead. 3 o'clock in the morning. I shot straight up in bed. Heart hammering, nerves screaming. My cell phone was ringing.
"What the feck?"
Danny snapped when I answered.
You sleep like the feckin' dead up there. I've been calling you for 5 feckin' minutes.
Are you okay? I demanded, shivering. I'd been in that cold place again. Shadowy dream remnants slipped away, but the chill remained.
Look out your window, Mac.
I pushed out of bed, grabbed my spear, and hurried to the window. My bedroom, like the last one that Barron's trashed, is on the rear of the building, so I can watch the back alley out my window and keep tabs on the shades. Danny was standing down there, in the narrow path of light between the bookstore and Barron's garage, cell phone propped between her skinny shoulder and ear, grinning up at me. Shades watched her hungrily from their roost in the shadows. She was wearing a long black leather coat that was straight out of a vampire movie, and much too big through the shoulders. As I watched, she slid something long and alabaster and shiningly beautiful out from under it. I gasped. It could only be the Sword of Light.
Let's go kick some fairy ass.
Danny laughed, and the look in her eyes was anything but 13 years old. Where's Rowena? I dropped my PJ bottoms and thrust a leg into jeans, teeth chattering. I hate my cold place dreams.
Rose away. She left on a plane this afternoon. Couldn't take the sword with her. I snuck out. You want to talk or you want to come slay some unseelie, Mac?
Was she kidding? This was a she-seer wet dream. Instead of sitting around, thinking, talking, researching, I could get out there and do something. I thumbed off my phone, layered 2 T-shirts beneath a sweater and a jacket, tugged on boots, grabbed my Mac Halo on the way out and strapped it on, wishing I had one for her, too. No matter. If we ended up in the dark somewhere, I'd stick to her like she-seer glue. We took down 87 unseelie that night. Then we lost count. Chapter 15. I spent most of the day before Halloween cleaning up after the prior night's festivities. Unlike the aftermath of fun back in Georgia, the remnants of a rollicking good time in Dublin weren't sticky plastic cups, crusts of half-eaten pizza, and cigarette butts dropped in beer bottles, but dead monsters and body parts. Problem. When you kill a fae, they cease projecting glamour, and contrary to pop culture's inane belief, the corpses do not disintegrate. They remain here, in our world, perfectly visible to all. In the pleasure of the kill, I forgot the corpses. So did Danny. It's not like they suddenly became visible to me when they die. They're always visible to me. I learned from the morning news about the discovery of movie props displayed in gruesome fashion around Dublin. Rubbery monsters from the set of some in-production horror movie, arranged as a prank, and people mustn't be alarmed but call the Garda. They've designated manpower to pick them up. My phone was ringing before the spot was over. It was Rowena.
Clean them up, you bloody imbecile.
I was eating breakfast. They just said the Garda are taking care of it, I muttered around a mouthful, mostly to irritate her. I'd been thinking the same thing. I needed to tidy up, and quickly. I was ashamed of myself for not realizing what I was doing.
Did you leave a trail of bodies that can be traced to you?
I winced. Probably. I didn't know you cared, Ro, I said coolly.
Was Danny with you last night?
She demanded. No.
You did that all by yourself?
Uh-huh.
How many?
I lost count. Over 100.
Why?
I'm sick of doing nothing. She was quiet for several moments, then.
I want you at the Abbey for the ritual tomorrow.
I almost choked on a bite of crusty muffin top. That was the last thing I'd expected her to say. I'd been bracing for a lengthy accounting of my many failings, and had been contemplating hanging up before she had the chance to begin. Now I was glad I hadn't. Why? There was another long silence.
There is strength in numbers,
she said finally.
You are a powerful she-seer.
Whether I like it or not remained unsaid, but floated in the air. Like the McKeltas, she wanted all the power that she could get at her disposal. I'd been thinking of crashing it anyway. I felt drawn to fight with them. If they were making a stand, I wanted to be there. I didn't feel drawn to join the McKeltas the same way. I guess blood tells. Now I had an invitation. What time?
The ceremony begins precisely 1 hour after sunset.
I didn't need to consult the calendar hanging in my bedroom upstairs to know the sun would rise tomorrow at 7:23 a.m. and set at 4:54 p.m. Nature rules me in ways she never used to. I can't wait for the long, bright days of summer again, and not just because of my love of the sun. These short, dreary days of fall and winter frighten me. December 22nd, the winter solstice, will be the shortest day of the year, at 7 hours, 28 minutes, and 49 seconds of daylight. The sun will rise at 8:39 and set at 4:08. That gives the shades 15 hours, 32 minutes, and 11 seconds to come out and play. More than twice as much as humans get. When will we know for sure it worked?
Shortly after we opened the orb,
she said, but she didn't sound certain of it. It was unsettling to hear doubt in Rowena's voice. I'll think about it. That was a lie. I'd most definitely be there. What's in it for me?
That you ask such a thing only reinforces my opinion of you.
She hung up. I finished my muffin and coffee, then headed out to sweep up breadcrumbs and keep the monsters from my door. I stuffed unseelie corpses in trash dumpsters, hid them in abandoned buildings, and even managed to shove two into a concrete pour on a construction site when the workers took a coffee break. I dragged the ones closest to the bookstore into the nearby dark zone. Even in broad daylight, it was hard for me to make myself go in there. I could feel shades in all directions, the pulsating darkness of their voracious, terrible hunger. Where did they go? Were they wedged in tiny dark crannies of the bricks, watching me? Did they slither off underground? Were they piled up in dark corners inside the decrepit buildings? How small could they get? Might one be hiding in that empty soda can at just the right angle to avoid the light? I'd never been a kick-the-can girl, and wasn't about to start now. The streets were oddly empty. I would find out later that record numbers of people called in sick the last 2 days before Halloween. Fathers took long overdue personal days. Mothers kept their children home from school for no good reason. I think you didn't need to be a she-seer to feel the taut, expectant hush in the air, to hear the distant drumming of dark hooves on a troubled wind moving closer, closer, closer. I sliced, diced, and bottled a new stash of unseelie while I was out. I'd expected Jane days ago, but decided maybe the effects lasted longer in ordinary humans. On my way back to the bookstore, I stopped at the grocery to grab a few items, then popped into a bakery and picked up the order I'd placed yesterday. Then I stood under the spray of a steaming hot shower, naked but for the thigh sheath I'd taken to wearing so I could give myself better than a one-handed hair washing, and scrubbed away the taint of dead unseelie. By midnight, Barron's hadn't shown up, and I was feeling pissy. He'd said he'd be here. I'd planned for it. By one, I was worried. By two, I was certain he wasn't going to show. At 3:15, I called him. He answered on the first ring. "Where the hell are you?" I snapped. At the same time, he snapped.
"Are you all right?"
"I've been waiting for hours," I said.
"For what?"
"You said you'd be here."
"I was delayed."
"Maybe you could have called," I said sarcastically. "You know, picked up the phone and said, 'Hey, Mac, I'm running late.'" There was a moment of silence on the other end of the line. Then Barron said softly,
"You've mistaken me for someone else. Do not wait on me, Miss Lane. Do not construct your world around mine. I'm not that man."
His words stung, probably because I'd done exactly that, structured my night around him, even played out in my head how it was going to go. "Screw you, Barron's."
"I'm not that man either."
"Oh, in your dreams! Allow me to put this into words you taught me yourself. I resent it when you waste my time. Keys, Barron's, that's what I've been waiting for. The Viper's in the shop." And I missed it like I missed my long blonde hair. We had bonded, the Viper and I. I doubted I'd ever get it back. It had been heavily damaged from its high-speed trip down the sidewalk, and if I knew Barron's as well as I thought I did, he'd sell it before he'd drive it again, no matter how flawlessly it was repaired. I kind of felt the same way. When you spend that much money, you want perfection. I need a car to drive.
Why?
I've decided to go to the Abbey for the ritual, I said.
I'm not certain that's wise.
It's not your decision.
Maybe it should be,
he said. I can't do anything to help the McKelters, Barons.
I didn't say you should. Perhaps you should remain in the store tomorrow night. It's the safest place for you.
You want me to go hide? My voice rose with disbelief on the last word. Months ago, I might have happily hid, watched late-night TV while painting my fingernails and toenails to match a divine shade of pink. Now, not a chance.
Sometimes caution is the wisest course,
he said. Tell you what, Barons, you come be cautious with me. I'll stay in, too. Not because I want your company, I said before he could make a pithy comment, but because of that whole good for the goose and gander thing. I'm not going to gander helplessly.
You're the goose, Miss Lane. I'm the gander.
As if I could mistake his gender. That was a double entendre, I informed him stiffly. I was being clever. Gander has multiple meanings. What good is being clever when the person you're being clever to is too dense to get it?
I'm not dense,
he said just as stiffly, and I sensed one of our childish fights looming on the horizon.
As a double entendre, it didn't work. Look up double entendre.
I know what double entendre means, and you can just shove your stupid birthday cake. I don't even know why I bothered. The silence was so protracted that I decided he'd hung up. I hung up, too, wishing I'd done it first. 20 minutes later, Barron stepped through the door from the back of the bookstore. Ice was crystallized in his hair, and he was pale from extreme cold. I was sitting on the sofa in the rear conversation area, too aggravated to sleep. Good. You finally stopped pretending you don't use the mirror. It's about time.
I only use the mirror when I must, Miss Lane. Even for me, it is unpleasant.
Curiosity overrode irritation. What constitutes must? Where do you go? He glanced around.
Where's the cake?
I threw it away. He gave me a look. I sighed, got up, and got it out of the fridge. It was a 7-layer chocolate cake with alternating raspberry and chocolate cream fillings, frosted pink, with a happy birthday Jay-Z bee in the center, delicately scripted and adorned with flowers. It was beautiful. It was the only thing that had made my mouth water in weeks, besides Unseelie. I set it on the coffee table, then got plates and forks from the cabinet behind the counter.
I'm confused, Miss Lane. Is this cake for me or for you?
Yeah, well, there was that. I'd been planning on eating a lot of it myself. I'd spared no expense. I could have downloaded 47 songs from iTunes instead. They were out of black icing, I said dryly. He wasn't reacting the way I'd planned. He didn't look the least bit touched or amused. In fact, he was regarding the cake with a mixture of horror and grim fascination, the same way I regard monsters I'm about to kill. I fidgeted. At the time I'd ordered it, it had seemed like a good idea. I'd thought it was a humorous way of poking fun at our relationship, while also saying, I know you're really old and probably not human at all, but whatever you are, you still have a birthday, just like the rest of the world.
I believe candles are customary,
he said, finally. I reached in my pocket, pulled out candles in the shape of numbers, and one I'd whittled to a stub of a period, and stuck them on top of the cake. He looked at me as if I'd sprouted a second head.
Pie, Miss Lane? I had pegged you for fail in high school math.
I got a D. The little stuff always trips me up. But the big stuff stuck with me.
Why pie?
It's irrational and uncountable. Funny girl, wasn't I?
It's also a constant.
he said dryly. They were out of sixes. Seems this time of year 666 is big, I said, lighting the candles. Obviously they haven't seen the real beast, or they wouldn't be playing at worshipping it.
Have there been more sightings?
He was still frowning at the cake, looking at it as if he expected it to sprout dozens of legs and begin scuttling toward him, thin-lipped, teeth bared. It's been transferring hands every day. There was a stack of papers by the couch. The crimes the newspapers were reporting made eating breakfast while reading it risky. He lifted his gaze from the cake to my face. It's just a cake, I promise. No surprises, no chopped-up unsealy in there, I joked. I'll even eat the first slice.
It's far from just a cake, Miss Lane. That you procured it implies
that I was having a sweet craving and used you for an excuse to indulge. Blow out the candles, will you? And lighten up, Barons. How had I not realized the delicacy of the ice I was on? What in the world had made me think I could give him a birthday cake and he'd be anything but weird about it?
I'm doing this for you,
he said tightly. I get that, I said. I was really glad I'd vetoed getting balloons. I just thought it would be fun. I stood, holding the cake out to him in both hands so he could blow out candles before they dripped wax on the pretty confection. I could use a little fun. I sensed violence in the room a split second before it erupted. In retrospect, I think he thought he had it caged and was nearly as surprised as I. Cake and candles exploded from my hands, shot straight up in the air, hit the ceiling, and stuck there, dripping gobs of icing. I stared up at it. My lovely cake. Then I was trapped between the wall and his body, with no awareness of having gotten there. He's frighteningly quick when he wants to be. I think he could give Danny a run for the money. He had my hands pinned above my head, braceleted at the wrists by one of his. The other was around my throat. His head was down and he was breathing hard. For a moment, he rested his face in my neck. Then he pulled back and stared at me, and when he spoke, his voice was low with fury.
Never do that again, Miss Lane. Do not insult me with your silly rituals and idiotic platitudes. Never try to humanize me. Don't think we're the same, you and I. We're not.
Did you have to ruin it? I cried. I've been looking forward to it all day. He shook me hard.
You have no business looking forward to pink cakes. That's not your world anymore. Your world is hunting the book and staying alive. They're mutually exclusive, you bloody fool.
No, they're not. It's only if I eat pink cakes that I can hunt the book. You're right. We're not the same. I can't walk through the dark zone at night. I don't scare all the other monsters away. I need rainbows. You don't. I get that now. No birthday for Barons. I'll pen that in right next to don't wait on him, and don't expect him to save you unless there's something in it for him. You're a jackass. There's a constant for you. I won't forget it. His grip on my throat relaxed.
Good.
Fine, I said, though I don't really know why. I think I just wanted the last word. We stared at each other. He was so close, his body electric, his expression savage. I moistened my lips, his gaze fixed on them. I think I stopped breathing. He jerked so sharply away that his long dark coat sliced air and turned his back to me.
Was that an invitation, Miss Lane?
If it was, I asked, astonishing myself, what did I think I was doing?
I don't do hypotheticals, little girl.
I looked at his back. He didn't move. I thought of things to say. I said none of them. He vanished through the connecting door. Hey! I shouted after him. I need a car to drive. There was no answer. A large chunk of cake dropped from the ceiling and splatted on the floor. It was mostly intact, just a little goopy. Sighing, I got a fork and scraped it onto a plate. It was noon the next day when I got out of bed, cleared my monster alarm from in front of my door, and opened it. Waiting outside for me was a thermos of coffee, a bag of donuts, a set of car keys, and a note. I unscrewed the thermos top, sipped the coffee, and unfolded the note. "Miss Lane, I would prefer you join me in Scotland this evening, but if you insist on helping the old witch, here are keys, as you requested. I moved it for you. It's the red one, parked in front of the door. Call if you change your mind. I can send a plane as late as 4 o'clock. C.J. It took me a moment to figure out the initials. Constant Jackass. I smiled. Apology accepted, Barons, if it's the Ferrari. It was. Chapter 16. Liminal is a fascinating word. Times can be liminal. Twilight is the transition from day to night. Midnight is the crack between one day and the next. Equinoxes and solstices and New Year's Day are all thresholds. Liminal can also be a state of consciousness. For example, those moments between waking and sleeping, also known as threshold consciousness or hypnagogia, a state during which a person might think herself fully alert but is actually actively engaged in dreaming. This is the time that a lot of people report a convulsive jerk or a feeling of physically falling. Places can be liminal. Airports with people constantly coming and going but never staying. People, too, can be liminal. Teens, like Danny, are temporarily stuck between child and adult. Fictional characters are often liminal beings, archetypes that straddle two worlds, marking or guarding thresholds, or are physically divided by two states of existence. Betweenness is a defining characteristic of liminal. Limbo is another. Liminal is neither here nor there, but exists between one moment and the next, poised in that pause where what's passing hasn't yet become what's becoming. Liminal is a magical time, a dangerous time, fraught with possibility and peril. Halloween seemed to drag on forever. Ironic, considering I had slept until noon. I had 4 measly hours to kill until 4 o'clock, when I would leave the city to head for the Abbey, yet it stretched interminably. I called Danny as soon as I got up. She was excited that I was coming, and told me the ritual was scheduled to begin at 6:15. "So what is it? A lot of chanting and weirdness?" I asked. She laughed and said, "Pretty much so. Invocations had to be recited and tithes paid before the orb could be opened and its fey essence released to fortify the walls." I asked what kind of tithes, and she got a little cagey. I wondered if Rowena planned to use my blood or something. I wouldn't put it past her. I called Christian, and he said all was a go. His uncles had begun the druid rites at dawn, although Barons wouldn't be joining them until later in the day. I called Dad, and we talked for a long time about cars and my job and the usual light stuff that makes up our conversations lately. I hate that Barons voiced him into a worry-free stupor, and I'm grateful for it. If Dad had said one halfway deep or insightful thing to me today, I might have burst into tears and told him all my problems. This is the man who kissed every bump or bruise I ever had, even the imaginary ones when I was little, and just wanted a Princess Jasmine Band-Aid and to be cuddled and cooed at, sitting on his lap. After a while, I asked for Mom. There was a long pause, and I was afraid she wouldn't come to the phone. Then she did. And I can't describe the joy I felt at hearing her voice for the first time in months. Though she chose her words with uncharacteristic tentativeness, she was coherent, clear-headed, and obviously not drugged. Dad said she still tired very easily, so I kept the conversation short and sweet, telling her nothing but happy news. My job was fabulous. I had a great employer. I'd gotten a raise. I was hoping to start my own bookstore when I came home. I was making concrete plans to finish college and get a degree in business, and no, I couldn't make Thanksgiving, but yes, I would try as hard as I could to get home for Christmas. Necessary lies. I understood them now. I could almost feel Alina standing behind me, nodding her head as I boosted our mother's spirits. Every time the phone had rung for me in Ashford, Georgia, and my sister had made me laugh and feel loved and safe, she'd been standing in Dublin, wondering if she'd be alive tomorrow. After I hung up, I dug into the donuts and punched up a random playlist on my iPod.